Face-to-Face Games proudly presents Grand Prix Toronto, the first Grand Prix featuring the Hour of Devastation Limited format, July 21st to 23rd. Come face pro players as they flex their muscles just 1 week before the Pro Tour. Every Grand Prix entry includes a sleep-in special and registered sealed pool for players with buys. Visit gptoronto2017.facetofacegames.com to register and learn more.
The first rule of Fight Club is...
It's time to get out.
So, don't give it away. I don't want to give it away.
All right. I don't really want to give it away yet.
All right, don't. All right. Just tell me other stuff.
I'll tell you after the show.
There you go. Everyone's like, oh, what the hell kind of intro is this shit?
Okay, so here's something that is actually sweet, though. Okay. The trophies for the North American Frontier Championships are sponsored by MTGFrontier.com, so they'll have the logo on it.
That's
pretty sweet news, right? So you're welcome, the world. Thank you, Kelly, for letting me be a part of that, and I guess Matt too.
Yeah.
It's but all right. Maybe I'll just put from Tony and Matt, and then
and then it's no one knows.
I have so many Matts in my life. It could be like one of seven people. It'll be fine.
You're just like, look, the next person into my life is your name, Matt. All right, I can handle that.
So because funny.
And not anyone else's real name.
I met two Ryans recently, and I was like, oh,
here we go again.
I'm like, okay, I guess I'm down to, like, two people, like, Matt and Ryan. I can't, like, really forget anyone's name or care, but, like, apparently four-letter white guy names is where it's at.
Oh, that's so harsh but true.
Right?
Totally. I don't know. All right, everybody, welcome in. This is the pre-North American Frontier Championship edition, extra long.
That's what she said.
Extra long and in charge.
We also apologize for our absence. Also, that's what she said.
Hey, man. Oh, yeah. So you know what? Look, we're not even going to introduce ourselves because the truth is we did a whole episode last week. And I don't know, man. Skype. I don't know. Or microphones or something.
I take 100% responsibility for this because nothing can be done to change it. So go for it. Hate on me. That's fine. Whatever. But last week we basically just talked about us and our personal lives and how our lifestyle changes have been going. And, you know, we got Kelly on there to rabble and yell about some stuff about the GP. But we'll make it up for all of you lovely folks this week by just rambling on forever and ever. And whatever. Do we even have show notes?
Yeah, what are you talking about? I always had show notes for everything. This is actually a big week. We've got news on Sunday that was, in my opinion, I think it's one of those sneaky little news things that Wizards dropped on purpose to like, oh yeah, no one's going to notice.
This is like that dead cat on the table thing, right?
This is 100% the dead cat on the table. This is actually scary because the way they, I'm going to use a bad word and people are like, come on now. And I'm like, it's Trumpian. There's a lot of, like, things that happen that's going on that's, like, if you're going to, like, slowly bleed value out of something, but, like, shuck and jive, you know, snake oil someone, this is what you do. So maybe they're not. Maybe they're just innocent or maybe they're incompetent. I don't know. But I do know this. The way they're doing it is shady as hell. So let's jump in because we're going to talk about F&M, which, in my opinion, has been falling apart for the last 5 years. And it's continually getting worse. Now, I had thought... with Fatal Push, with Aether Hub, with Renegade Rallier. I had thought, Wizards got it. I for the first time in a long time, I was like, wow. And I who don't go to F&Ms, was like, Fatal Push for an F&M? I might actually go. So all these weird arguments out there of people saying, you don't play Magic because of token or cards. You play Magic because you want to play with friends. I'm like, no, you don't. You play Magic because you play Magic. Everyone has a different way of playing it, but you go to an LGS on a Friday night for a multitude of reasons. The obvious ones are, of course I want to play Magic, of course I want to play with good friends and have a great play experience. Those aren't something that's, I don't know, that's like the baseline, right? And then on top of that, it should be like, I want to try to play for something that's worth something.
So let me tell you how we got there at Face to Face Toronto. So when Kelly and I got together and we were coming up with ways to like make F&M interesting again, and when Standard was in like a bit of a lull, and this is even like 2 years ago, we've been doing this.
Hold on. You haven't even heard what they did.
Let me tell you what we did before we tell you what Wizards did. Because we did this 2 years ago because we saw this and we sort of had the foresight to build on the point you were making, is that people don't come to play with friends, they come to win a thing. So
I think they do both.
Well, I mean, they do both, but this is how you have a large, diverse crowd.
Yes.
Right? That's how you have more than like 8 people drafting. This is how you get 32 people drafting in one night. Is we made we stabilized and attempted to lower our entry fee as much as reasonably possible while maximizing the output to 3-1 and 4-0 players. And recently we've done that by the 4-0 players get a card that buy list back to the store for $60. So at a $10 entry, which I pushed from this from day one, is that if you charge a little bit more but make the reward so much greater, you will have people that are interested in coming and competing and going 4-0 on every night that you offer that. And it started over a year ago with Modern, and we changed the tournament entry from $5 to $10 and then put up like sweet prizes, like $70, $80 cards for 4-0. And if there was multiple 4-0s, you would kind of like, when we first started, we didn't have the capital to like give everyone one, but it would be like a dice roll off, and then the other person would get like double the credit. So you would pay $10 in, and if you went 3-1, you got $20 credit. If you went 4-0 and didn't win the card, you get $40 credit. Now that was appealing to a lot of people. Something. Exactly. Yeah. But the most successful thing we did is just said like, F it. If you go 4-0, you get one of the card prizes. And we offer up a lot to it, but we have 50, 60-person Modern F&Ms.
Okay, so let me jump in now, because this is like, there's so much to unpack about this. And I know Wedge did a great video on it, and other people have like taken both sides. Like Corbin has taken Corporate Chill's side, and he thinks this is great, which I'd give up on that guy. And the other people are like looking at this from their point of view as a player, and then you have like your point of view as a shop. So let's unpack this. They basically announced they want to have no value to F&M. Or essentially what they want to do is they want to have F&M be no sharks. And I believe they're doing this because they're like, well, let's give out foil zombie tokens and foil dinosaur tokens, like really weird stuff that you don't need to play Magic. It's just extra. And it doesn't cause any issues with devaluing booster boxes because it's not in a booster box. And I think this is very critical to where they're going. So they took away things like Fatal Push, Aether Hub, which are great, and I don't know why anyone had an issue with, and I don't think anyone did, but they're claiming that when they made crappy promos, people complained. So they took the promo away, which is completely not what anyone wanted. They just didn't want crappy promos.
Correct.
So now you can go and you get a foil token, which is fine, I guess, whatever. And then they want you to compete on Saturday in a showdown. And I assume what they want to do is say, hey, all you hardcore, in air quotes, grinder guys, the guys that want to like spike stuff, you come on Saturday. And then F&M is like casual, happy time, fun time, everybody bring your brews and have fun. I firmly believe that Wizards has lost sight of what the point of F&M was. It was the greatest branding exercise I've seen in a long time. Friday night Magic. It's Friday, what do? You play Magic. You can try all you want to move people into Saturdays and Sundays or whatever. It's hard, and I'm sure you even see this. There's just a core understanding that, hey, F&M is there. So what they're trying to do is separate people into groups. And I assume it's because casual people show up, get sharked out, or they just get beat, right? Someone shows up and they just get smashed 0-4 and they leave. They never come back.
I mean, it's also, I'll let you finish your point, but it's also for targeted marketing and advertising too.
Sure. Okay. And I love that aspect of like, hey, I get it. And I understand that they were just picking from a player. The F&M promos made little to no sense, but it wasn't the promo's fault. It was the choice of the person there. They were throwing darts at a dartboard. Like, we called this like 10 weeks ago. We were like, hey, Kaladash is releasing. Everyone is going to play with energy. Why don't you make Aether Hub the, like, it's so
or a foil energy
that
token.
Yeah, exactly. And right? I mean, okay, that's probably where they're going to go with it. But look, Aether Hub is a better card. Everyone needs a four of who's playing it. It's like such a card that you could have easily just said, look, yes, if we leave this As an uncommon in the booster boxes, it's worth so much money. But if we take it out or we leave it or we overprint it, whatever, who cares? The point is you're going to get a lot of people playing and they need that card. So like that makes so much sense. I don't understand why they're scared to put actual cards that have like value, because that's kind of what people go. I remember 10 years ago, you'd go and you would get crazy ones. That was exciting, man.
Yo, even when they did the Summer of Path to Exile Serum Visions.
Oh, that was great.
People literally showed up for those cards.
Yeah. And I don't understand, like, that the argument out there is that that attracts the wrong type of player. And I'm like, no, it attracts a player. Like, let's stop labeling the people that show up because they want something good versus the people that just show up because they're addicted to Magic. Like, enough of that. That is crazy. And I came up with an idea, and I don't even know if it works, and I'm sure you guys have your own systems, but really, if you have to offer value, and FACE does that, and that's why I drive all the hours. It isn't to go play with friends, it's because, like, you guys offer the complete package. There isn't anyone that does it like you, and I would say, like, Wizards need to approach that F&M as at that same mentality. Like, let's give them everything. Let's give them great value, and I'm not talking mythics. Like, guys, come on, stop being silly, like, going to that extreme. We're talking solid cards that make sense, that are on theme and on story point. That is very easy to do. Like, Ixalan, I'm going to just predict it. Ixalan, okay, what do we got? I'm sure there's a pirate lord, and I'm sure that pirate lord is going to be like, hey, how hard is it to look at this card and say, hey, that's commander, that's a tribal commander card. Oh, and there's probably a tribal theme, so maybe this card, you know, it's the, what, $5 rare? Let's give that out week one. Like, why not do that? And then you have a leading edge marketing where you're like, holy, I opened the Pirate Lord. It's week one. I'm building Pirate Tribal. Instead of, hey, it's 5 months later, I got an Aether Hub that's going to not be useful right now.
So, yeah, I totally agree with that.
It's backwards thinking. It's complete backwards. They need to be proactive, give you the stuff to then lead you into playing more. So if I open a card that's cool, or if someone said, hey, I'll buy that card off you for $10. I'm like, why? Is it worth something? Like, if I'm a new player, my mentality is, why is it? So I have something of value now? Ooh, maybe I'm going to build the deck. I know this for a fact. Most new players hold on to value. They don't want to sell it. They don't want to trade it. And they end up spending a ton more money to complete that set or that deck or whatever it is. So I think we need a more of a strategy like that to help build F&M. Now, if the argument here is that it's attracting, you know, Fatal Push is going to attract the wrong crowd. It's going to attract all the modern grinders and they're going to crush all the casuals. Okay, that is legitimate. That is,
well,
part of,
here's
part
a
of the
quick
process.
And simple fix, and I'll let you keep ranting. Just give us more promos. Like, we as an Advanced Plus store who is in the 99th or 100th percentile of every single thing that we do except for standard when it's impossible to be in that, we get 4 per F&M. So we go first, worst, and 2
crazy
randoms.
I just, you're right. Like, when I hear that, I'm like, what?
Nah. Like, now, they can see our stats of how many people come to the events, right? If they say, oh, you guys have 65 people for F&M, you guys can have 15% of your total population. Like, make it a top 8 thing. Make your playing your second and third round worth something. Make the tournament an exciting tournament, not just a place to come and casually play. Like, turn it into a daily occurrence.
Now, look, I agree with that, but again, we're the serious casuals. We're like this weird group of people who want to play, like, seriously, but in a casual, like, fun. We want to have it be fun. We don't want to be, like, miserable, like Fournier would love to play. But, shout out Fournier. But here's the thing.
Dude, that guy loves Frontier.
I know. He loves everything. He's awesome. Here's what I'm trying to get at, though. There's got to be a way where you, as a store owner, even I know just being in the store, how many times I've been at pre-release, I can see the noobs from the not noobs. And I can see the people who are seriously trying to, like, casual it out there because it's fun. And then, yeah, you can see the guy that's like, he's only here to bust his packs and leave. So maybe there's a way to, like, have those segment that a bit. Give them a point system where, hey, you know, you've won 3 in a row. You are now in this group. And, hey, you've lost 3 in a row. Here's an extra promo card. Like, to me, that is how you get people who want to be like, I love this LGS. I'm here for life. I'm invested in Magic. You know, oh, I got to drop $500 on a standard deck. Yeah, but you know what? I went 3-0. They gave me these cards. Like, I don't know. The world we're going in is like one where they bleed value out. They try to, hey, look at this shiny token. And I don't know.
Well, they're trying to develop the system that you're talking about, where if you lose three in a row, you get like a thing or whatever with this Sealed League. But the Sealed League is a really great concept, but it's definitely like level 0.5 thinking. It's not level zero. They've put some thought into it. It's not level one because we're having this conversation right now. But this basically means when you play three games or you lose three games, I believe it is. Oh man, Kelly's going to kill me that I don't know all of this before the GP. You get to then buy a new pack and put it in your deck.
Sure.
Right? And we're on a track, and the track is going in a direction, but who's the conductor here? Who's the one really, like leading this? Well, that's, we're trying to put a lot of energy into this going into the GP, so we have 3,000 people who get to see what the heck is Sealed League. And basically the way that Sealed League starts is you bring this bingo card that we designed up to the registration decks, you pay $20 and get three packs. So you basically buy your three packs and then pay into the prize pool. And you just play a bunch of people whenever you want with your deck, whenever you can. Those people sign off on sort of what type of player they are. And it forces you to sort of like meet some new and interesting people. And each time you fill one of the 3x3 bingo rows, you get another pack. So you actually get the pack from the GP for free. So it's really actually $20 for five packs, or sorry, for 6 packs, which is on point with being the price that we charge for draft, which is still less than buying three packs. I think you can get up to 5 extra packs. So it's actually pretty sweet if you play a bunch of people, but it's still like, it's not really like, it's like a do-it-yourself, it's like a choose-your-own-adventure thing.
Exactly.
And that's like not quite the tournament experience that a lot of people are looking for.
But you see, here's where I'm like, I'm hitting a wall, because I feel like they're trying to do too much, and they're trying to say like, hey, casual people that like buy packs at Walmart, like come to F&M and buy booster pay. Like, I feel like that's not going to happen. And they're taking like this, okay, maybe it's 10%. The people who are like in the scene and they're here, they're established players, and they're just like, you're not worth anything. And I had this discussion 10, 20 years ago with banks, which was, if you're a new customer, the bank will literally bend over backwards, give you an espresso, you know, like they want your business. And when you are a customer, they just shit on you. Like, get out of my bank. We don't care. Don't ask us questions. Pay your service fees and be quiet. And that is really what I feel like. That the small group of very dedicated people on the journey of years and are spending all this money, like, we're not important at all. And I feel like F&M, like the promos at F&M, the ones that even we like to go and look at, like, oh man, the game day promos, all this, the cool art, those were kind of like for us. I don't know why taking that away is, my brain cannot fathom why you would take it away. Why wouldn't you just give foil tokens on top of that? I'm just so, I need to sit down at a boardroom table with these people when they propose it, and just to be the counter argument to say like, hold on, I represent the voice of the established player. That makes no sense. Like, why are you taking it away from them?
Or at least be able to say, now you guys all think about this, right? Like, and that's something that obviously you're trained and very good at doing because you're passionate about it. But like, that's not like, we said this last time and the time before that none of you guys heard, was that hopefully this is what like the Melissa de Torres and the Paul Cheons are willing to step up and do, and not want to step on their X $1,000 a year salary working for Wizards and piss anybody off. I hope they piss a bunch of people off. I hope they say like, shake your heads. Like, you're like, we speak for the people. Like, we're the Maddie Studios. Like, give your head a shake and think about how this is going to work on ground level. And then again, have the foresight to make it relevant when you make the decisions now in 3 months, not 6 months or 9 months.
I mean, I don't know. I can't talk about certain stuff in my business life because, like, I'm under NDAs. But I'm literally sitting, like, in these corporations that you're like, wow, this is big time. And they make decisions, like, exactly like Wizards are. And I'm on the inside. So I can actually propose questions to these people. And I'm getting feedback. And it's old. Like, my biggest, like, complaint is that it's just old people established that they did it this way. It's good. Everything is fine. You know, it's like the monkeys, man. One over their eyes, ears, mouth, like, that's what they just will not want that fresh blood. And that's why I'm like, maybe Wizards really needs to be like, hey, the management people in there, the people in charge of these OP and all these people, we need fresh people, young, fresh people in here who can take the game for the next 20 years. I don't want the guy who's been sitting there that's coasting through for the last 20 years that he's bored and tired. And he's just like, whatever. Like, to me, when I looked at those FNM promos they picked that were bad, it felt like someone who was, like, literally just looking through a spreadsheet, like, all right, that one, click. Like, no thought at all, zero thought into them. And when we look at a set, we're like, oh, these five cards are awesome. And I'm not talking, like, Nicol Bolas as a promo. I'm talking, like, just average, cheap $5 cards. But they're cool. Like, you're like, hey, that's a four of. That's a play set. Or that's a build around me. Like, it's so easy to see those cards. And I don't know. This vague argument that it's so hard and it's impossible to predict. I think it's just the wrong people in charge. The people that are saying that are just the wrong people. And it's just frustrating that, oh, man. If your game is stagnant, right? And your game is, like, on a downward trend, and you're competing against Hearthstone, and you have all these, like, outside forces, like, putting pressure on you, the first thing you want to do is, like, man, we got to beat these people, you know? Like, how do we make it better? How do we offer more value? Like, the opposite thinking is so counter to what you should be doing that I can't even process it, and it's just very frustrating, but we're not going to waste the whole episode on this, people. We just did. Yeah, we just did. Well, we're doing a double because we screwed up last week. But let's talk about some exciting stuff, because if FNM goes bad, that's fine. We're serious casuals, so it doesn't really affect us.
I love how much you love that. Store
that's like, it actually affects me a great deal.
But that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here to talk about the hype.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Frontier, because, guys, we are 4 days away. We're casting on a Monday as a rarity. Friday, Frontier Championship. I'm crushing everyone. This is a given. I'm already envisioning me holding the trophy.
Well, I already put your name on the second place trophy, Maddie. So that's you just might as well live up to those expectations, because you will not beat me this time.
If we face each other again, I'm just gonna be like, come on.
Yeah, I'll destroy you.
You probably will. I burned all my good karma winning in Vegas.
Yeah, you did.
You totally bricked, so I know if you were on target.
Dude, again. I didn't brick. I had one less win than you over the 16 rounds, and it was because I lost to you. I didn't call that a brick.
When we played, you bricked against me.
Yeah, that's true. It was pretty bad. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Bad Aether Vials.
Yeah.
Or not Aether Vials. Whatever the other thing is. Energy thing. Spinning Bob.
Marvels.
Yeah. Marvels. That's the one. Yeah. Okay, so Frontier Championship. We've got a lot of new cards. It's in crazy. I was playing Super Friends in Vegas. I'm on the fence if I'm playing it again. I have a few cards. We're not going to spoil it because we're serious casuals.
Yep.
But we're all going into this, like,
if super you DM me, I'll probably just give you my deck list, but I don't want to make it public per se.
Because we don't want to lose to Matt Mealing, that's why.
Yeah, screw that guy. That guy can't even decide what deck he wants to play, and he's not even going to test with me this week. He's on like five different decks.
Wow, okay. You should have seen him.
So he came to my house, and he opened the Frontier box, and he was like, you know those like air-filled, like floppy Gumby-looking guys that are like on the side of the street?
Yeah, imagine that
filled with magic cards. That was my living room when Matt left.
Just everywhere.
I don't even know what he took or what he has or what he's playing. I couldn't know less about what was going on in his brain. And I was like, hey, man, I have 2 days off. Let's test. And he's like, nope, I have family business. Also, I don't like you anymore. So that's just like a thing that he says, and it's fine, but we keep hanging out, so I don't believe him. But no, he just told me, he's like, no, I'm not testing with you because I don't want you even to know what I'm playing.
Oh, I love it. He's so serious casual.
Right?
So funny.
The most serious casual.
So, like, let's take...
He triple sleeves his deck.
Oh, I know. Well, we're going to try to get this episode early. So if anyone listening and you're playing this event, we're going to give you a quick overview of, like, because we don't know. The metagame can, there's a lot of stuff that's changing. We haven't had any big event yet of, like, all the new cards. So this is going to be fun, man. This is going to be a lot of spice at this tournament. But a couple of the big decks you need to look out for, I think, is Jeskai Flyers. And essentially it's, like, good stuff, Spell Queller, Self of Spirit, Smuggler's Copter. It's kind of like blue-white flyers, really, just splashing for Manus Rider.
Okay, before we do this episode of MTGFrontier.com podcast that I already did, everyone should go there and listen to that, because this is sort of what Maddie and I are going to talk about, but I get to talk about it with somebody who's a real serious casual. So this is going to be fun, but definitely, I know I get a cross promotion and I get to be like totally self-serving here, but head to MTGFrontier.com and check out the... North American Frontier Championship primer. And it's not how to play each deck or where they sit in the metagame. It's just sort of like the 20 decks that are all kind of viable and some good cards that go in them. It was to get everyone excited about all the possibilities. But now I'm dying to know what Matty Studios thinks about.
Well, see, this is the thing. So I listened to that episode, and I don't want to do that. I'm not.
Wow, I'm flattered.
I know. It was a good episode. Dude, I want to win this. I'm telling you, first place is mine.
All right, so this is just all misinformation then?
Yeah, this is totally like just tricking everybody, giving everyone the wrong sideboard advice.
All right, I see what's up. Like, Let's talk about new cards, because that's something that Matt and I didn't get a chance to do. So what stands out in some of the new cards for you, Matty? Like, let's just start with white.
Well, let's do something better, which is let's take
no show notes.
No, dude, because, well, this part is all off the cuff, man. So let's look at our, because there's a lot of cards in here that I think I want to play with. And I want to tell you about, like, what deck I think we're going in.
All right, I'm excited for this.
Okay, so the card that we really didn't get a lot of time to talk about was Hour of Devastation. Because we talked about it more in terms of, like, standard and that. I'm like, oh, it's cool. This card feels, like, really good.
You know what this card does? Lets a blue-white control deck be a blue-white-red control deck by being able to kill a Gideon.
Yeah.
The most important thing that this card does is kills Gideon.
Oh, it does. I mean, this deck does a lot. This is the card that, at the time, I was like, Super Friends. This is anti-Super Friends, so this is why I need Supreme Wills to stop this card.
Yeah,
if
you
this
do.
Card resolves, this is game over. So anyone who's playing against me, I hate you if you try to cast this card against me. I'm going to be packing everything that... My sideboard is all blue, by the way.
Are you going to go so deep to play Invasive Surgery, where if you have Delirium, you get to exile all copies?
Yes. I'm not even kidding right now. My sideboard was 4 Spell Queller and then a bunch of other cards. I think it's going to be 4 Spell Queller and just... 11 counterspells.
Yeah, but you know, Spellcaller doesn't hit this, right?
Yeah, this card is like this. Okay, in Infinity, this is my Stony Silence. This is my. Yep. I'm done.
Yep.
I can't come back. There's no, like, if you fire this off when I'm like, I've got my Nahiri and my Nissa out and my ramp guys, I'm done. I get this game.
So let me give you a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel here, because if you plus your Nahiri or plus your Nissa Vital Force, they both go to 6.
Yeah, but I'm not playing Nissa Vital Force.
Well, maybe you should consider it. And the reason that I'm saying
this
is because those are two planeswalkers that can actually attempt to dodge this, whereas Gideon comes down on 4, he pluses to make himself vulnerable to something like Stasis Snare, or Gideon's... he has to attack for Gideon's defeat. But then he pluses again to try and get out of range and attack you, which means he's not making 2/2s, and it means he's not embleming. So I think Hour of Devastation is going to be very, very good at killing Gideon, but it's going to have a little tougher time dealing with something like Nahiri or Nissa Vita Force.
Now, the one thing that I'm looking at this card is that, yeah, my Heart of Kirin's live. That's good, I guess.
That's very good.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like if this card resolves, it doesn't matter. I really don't know how I come back. This one scares me because... I'm playing dorks. Any board wipes against my dorks hurts already, but at least if I get my planeswalkers on the board, like, the entire reason I built Super Friends was because there was no card that existed like this. This is, like, literally why I built this deck, so that your removal is blanked against me. You can try to target my dorks, but I don't care, because that's not my strategy anyways. It's, like, planeswalker advantage. So this card scares me. So I need to know from you, Spell Queller, 4 of, like, that's a given. That card is just amazing. The problem is
your next two best ones, Matty, are Disdainful Stroke and Negate.
So I was thinking, okay, that those are like the standards, and then like maybe run a couple dispels.
Dispels like becoming less and less something that I'm excited about right now, because really dispel was like a huge answer, 1 minute answer to like a dig through time. And now, like, when your opponent digs against you and you have a bunch of planeswalkers, they're digging for hour. And I think you need a little more multi-purpose card like Disdainful Stroke that also counters dig, it counters rally, it counters Marvel, it counters Emrakul. Like, Disdainful Stroke, I think, got like a lot better because Hour of Devastation is a real card. And I was joking about Invasive Surgery. I don't think you should be going that deep as to counter sorceries, because like, you're never going to counter a sorcery on like turn 2 or turn 3.
Yeah.
So just get off that game. And how many Hour of Devastations is your opponent going to play against you? Two, maybe? And not going to get a card from their hand. I think Disdainful Stroke is really the card that someone like Maddie's four-color Planeswalker deck is looking for.
I that's exactly the information I wanted to know.
Also hits Gideon, too.
Oh, okay, good. All right. Well, this is my plan, then. Four Spellcoiler, four Disdainful Stroke, and then that now opens me back up to, like, allowing me to run Radiant Flames in the deck, because that's going to be super important, because, if you saw SCG Standard event, that red deck looked nuts.
That red deck was great.
Whew, I can only imagine how powerful that deck gets once it gets Monastery Swift Spear and some of the crazy stuff out of, like, Frontier. So,
Maddie, let's talk about red real quick, because there's another card that might be good against you.
I know. Okay, this is what I was...
Go for it. You know what it is.
Well, I don't know if I know what it is, but... So, the next deck we want to talk about, because we gave...
No, I want to talk about just a red card that's good against Maddie's studio so people can play it. And that's...
The whole thing is not going to be about cards that destroy me.
Well, it will be. So I want you... Well, the reason that we're talking about these, Maddie, the first step to solving a problem is identifying that we have one. Right. So, a Braid. A Braid is an incredibly strong card.
This card's gross.
That helps destroy things like Heart of Kieran when they can't be touched because they've been Gideon Emblemed with a Stoke the Flames, or you have like a Nissa plus counter on them, which is very common in your deck to go turn two Heart of Kieran, turn three, crew it, put a counter on it. Now you have a 5-power thing. A Braid is a very, very, very strong card, and being at instant speed, you can Gear Hulk it.
Yeah. I'm actually very scared. Now, a Braid is a card that I almost was considering, because when I played Blue Eye Control against Graham, Torrential Gear Hulk is almost impossible for me to get rid of.
And shout out to Graham for still playing Blue White Control.
Oh, wow. I got to play that again.
That guy's a champ.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this. A Braid is one of those cards that look like, on the surface, it's debatable that, do I want Shock or Lightning Strike to go to the face? And then on the other turn, you're like, the flexibility to run this main deck is crazy. It's just so good.
Yeah, it has two ways to kill Smuggler's Copter.
Yeah, and Smuggler's Copter, by the way, is legit. And Marvel. I mean, I don't know if a Braid is any good against Marvel.
It is. Play it and they're going off. No, they, as proven by me against you, one spin isn't be all end all.
Oh, actually, you're true. You're right. There's still variants there. So, okay. So a Braid is another card that we think we're going to see a lot of this tournament. The card that I was really hyped on was Supreme Will. That's the Mana Leak /
Impulse.
Yo,
this imagine card card with Baral, where it actually is Mana Leak or Impulse.
So this card
it's getting
is,
hot in here.
Yeah, this card is something that I want to play. It's the problem is right now, I just can't jam all these new cards in the deck. And I'm going to reduce, I have a big fear that I'm going to just reduce my deck to just not being functionally just the Dirtle deck of like awesome stuff, but it doesn't actually do anything. The real power of my deck in Vegas was after we tweaked it. It was just so consistent. It was just pressure. It didn't have answers, but holy cow, it was a pressure severe.
Maddie, that was one of my most exciting memories from that. Telling you no so many times in the short amount of time. It was amazing. You're like, what about no?
Yeah.
No. No. Play good cards. And we got there.
Oh, dude, we got it. The deck I showed up with when I laid it out on the table, you just ripped. He's like, what are you doing? No. Like half the pile. I had to buy an extra deck box to hold all the cards I didn't play with. Because he's like, you can't do this. Hey, no, what are you doing?
We got there.
Yeah, no, you're right. So like a Braid is a card that, I don't know, man. I feel like that's a game one. In my head, I suffer from serious casualnesses. I can see how it's going to be great. I see how I'm going to be killing the Snack. I see how I'm going to be taking out opposing Art of Kieran. I see how I'm taking out Jeskai Flyers. Boom.
It's a good way in Saheeli to sort of put the pressure on a Walking Ballista before you combo off, right? Doesn't matter how big the Ballista is. You get to shatter it.
Yeah. So that's a card like I see, number one, I know I'm going to see against it. Like, people are going to play it. I feel like we're probably going to have a few people that are just like, I don't want to have fun. I want to, like, win. And we're going to see some mono red, which we saw that in Vegas, too. The mono red deck is pretty scary. I think it got way better.
I got stomped by mono red last week and on, like, a turn four where it was, and it was pretty basic. It was just turn one Swift Spear, turn two Dragon Fodder, turn three Hordling Outburst, turn four Tarkus Command.
Well, that was it.
I was just dead. It was 12 damage and I fetched twice.
That is just like the classic thing you got to be aware of. Like, but now with Earthshaker Kenra,
yo,
what scares me is like in the decks I'm playing, that card is like, yeah, I kill it, but it can be eternalized. And my deck isn't, I can't close so fast. I mean, I can if you're not putting pressure, but if you're putting pressure on me, like, I don't know how many games where I'm playing Shaheely, they're killing Shaheely. I'm playing, you know, Nissa, they're killing, I get a plan, but like, we're back and forthing. And just the constant fear of me worrying, like, oh crap, they're getting a six mana, they're getting a six mana. And then it's just free cards. Like, I've worn them out, but they're like, yeah, eternalized, bam. So I think the eternalized cards are very good. I think we're going to see that one. I think we're going to see the Dream Stealer. Whew, that card looked crazy on SCG. I don't know. Maybe it's too slow. Three mana, too slow. But man, when it comes back eternalized, that is an absolute scary
mind card. Twist on a stick for all you old school players.
With Menace.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, yeah.
That's just scary.
Yeah, and guess what color has some okay, decent removal?
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's why, oh man. I know we're going to see that, so I'm excited. Like, that's a card I want to play against. Well, I don't want to play against it, but I want to see games. The card that I actually decided, I know, I broke down. I tell people never do this. Don't ever watch coverage with, like, face-to-face open because you're like, oh, add to cart. Because, like...
Or do, please, you can do that. That'd be great.
I did it again, dude. I bought four Champion of Wits. Okay? Now, people are like, what? This card is cool. I feel like this card is like... I don't know. So I'm going to read it for you. So it's a 2-1 for 3. Blue card. Naga Wizard. So when it enters the battlefield, you may draw two cards. Or you draw cards equal to its power if you do discard two. So at first, it's like, yeah, okay, I draw two, discard two. And I'm like, that's kind of cool. You know, you're filtered through, especially in Shaheely. I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat. I find my pieces, combo win. But eternalizing it for 7 later on, and you draw 4? Discard 2?
Yep.
Again, this is like,
and that's
one
not
of those
a card
cards
from your hand, right? So that's, yeah, like, that's like,
yeah,
it's kind of feels like the value when you would blink an Oath of Jace with a Felidar Guardian. Where you're adding to the board, or you're not really using something from your hand, and then you get this huge card selection engine that also, in this format, fuels hotness like Dig Through Time.
Right? And that's the thing I was even... Now, I know this... I can't... My Super Friends deck, I can't. It's just... I'm going to ruin it if I start doing this again. But Grixis Control really had me thinking, this card feels nuts. This card feels really good, man. Tasigur, Dig Through Time, this guy... Man, I don't know. I think there's something there. I don't have a brew. Sorry, guys. I thought I did, but I just, I don't know. Maybe, you know what? Maybe it's a Thursday night. It's going to be late. I'm just going to brew it up. But that's a card I think we're going to see someone try to play with. I think it's good. So,
yeah.
Be aware.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I totally agree with you. Now, what about something like Liliana's Defeat?
So, Liliana's Defeat, we touched on when it first came out. It's a card that I've been looking at for a while.
Here's why I like it. Okay. Because there's not actually very many good clean answers in black to an opposing Tasigur or Gurmag Angler.
And for that, I like it, right? Like, we also are going to see the dragon. People are playing that now. That thing is good.
Well, the fact that this is a little bit slow means, yeah, you're probably going to take 5 from, like, a Dragonlord Kolaghan, but this will help kill, like, all of those sort of big, awkward toughness things in like, the Atarka red deck if you want to go so deep as to splash black for some really solid removal. And on top of that, I know that it hasn't been as played and as, like, dominant as I hoped it to be, but Liliana's Death Majesty reanimating an Emrakul is... ridiculous.
Dude, I think that deck just has not found its feet yet.
Well, here's the problem.
It's got such power.
A card like Crackling Doom really, really, really holds it down.
Yeah.
However, we haven't seen it where, like, when I was trying to play it, this is when Liliana was spoiled, and like 8 times in a row I played against a guy who works at the shop, Brad, and I would just play my turn 4 Liliana, and I would reanimate Emrakul, and he'd be like, end step Crackling Doom, redirect, kill your Lily, kill your Emrakul, untap with Dig Through Time. And that happened to me like 6 times in a row, and I was like, okay, I'm very clearly doing this wrong, but I'm also, this isn't ready yet. So now we have like the giant 8/8 demon as like another reanimate target that's actually castable, so you don't have to have like mono Ulamogs. Yeah. So maybe there is some sort of red-black reanimator deck that's gonna put a bunch of crazy things into play, like the Razakel or whatever, as well as, you know, Black Gear Hulk, Red Gear Hulk. Like, these are cards that can come into play a turn ahead of schedule and do a massive amount of damage. Let's say, Matty, let's say you're playing against me, and I have an Emrakul in my graveyard, and then I reanimate the red Gear Hulk. You have to let me draw cards, right? Yeah, because now you know Emrakul's in the deck, because I can 20
I know.
You.
I know. You did that this exact scenario unfolded in our playtesting when I was playing at the store. It's gross. Like, I definitely feel that reanimation strategy is good. I just feel like Grixis Control looks better.
Sure.
It just looks like it does more powerful stuff. I think like a reanimation strategy is legit. Especially with, what is the black card? I think it's 6 mana and you pick 2 creatures?
Ever After.
That card also feels like game over, man. Game over. Like, I don't know. You just need more ways to get stuff in the graveyard. But let's talk about another new card that I think, I don't think a lot of people realize what this card does. In terms of, we all know it's powerful. We all know it's going to be good in Modern. But I feel like it shuts down 2 decks. So any sideboard card that literally turns off 2 decks in Frontier, I got to pay attention to. And that's Solemnity. This card against an energy strategy is game over, dude.
Step one, I'm very impressed that you pronounced it. Good job. It's not a Palladian. Second off, yeah, you're totally right. This, it feels like it's a little slow and like kind of a do-nothing draw on turn 7 or 8. Like against Scales, it's totally reasonable for them to have some stuff in play. You play the Solemnity, they untap, blow it up, and carry on with their game plan. However, if they do not have it, they will lose the game.
Yeah, so the 2 decks we were talking about are energy decks, energy-based decks, and then anything with counters. Now, there's variations of them. They're not just one strategy. There's a few energy decks.
Yeah, there's Pummeler, there's Marvel, there's Energy Aggro. And, like, even your deck, honestly, Maddie, I know Solemnity doesn't affect Planeswalkers.
Oh, it does. It does.
It doesn't touch Planeswalkers, but it's really good against Nissa, who puts counters on there. Mm-hmm. But the second part is a lot of the 4-color decks are utilizing energy to fix their mana. Aether Hub, Harness Lightning, Servant of the Conduit.
Yeah, and so I'll tell you this. Based on the play, because I ended up buying promo Aether Hubs in Vegas, just because, like,
I still don't have mine. I'm jealous, just saying.
Oh, dude, they're so beautiful.
I know.
I probably overpaid, but whatever.
Yeah.
What I realized is that card for me was crucial. Like, it was... opening hand, I was like, all right, we're good. Like, because until I get my Oath of Nissa on the board, man, I am screwed. Like, if I don't have green, it's gross. And many times I'm like waiting. I'm like, just give me an Aether Hub, man. I just need an untapped anything, you know? Or if I'm like, I need to drop my authority to the council. So this card is something I am scared about. I don't know if I would board against me. I think there's more powerful things you could do, but it does mess with me. But I think this messes with Snek big time. I think it messes with energy decks. I almost think it shuts them off. Like, what are you doing? Like, when that comes down.
So here's the thing to remember, though, is those energy decks, especially if they are leaning on sort of like a Paul Dean from Standard strategy where they're like teamer energy, this is a card that you're playing into Censor even on the play.
Really? You think so?
I absolutely think so. If their options are Censor and Harness Lightning, they're going to be really, really well defended against you tapping out on turn 3 to either play your threat or this Solemnity.
Right, so they're going to be prepared.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the Marvel deck should be a little less all-in on Marvel and a little more, like, control-y based, because if they are all-in on the energy thing, they will lose to this card. So I think just as having the foresight of, this is a card that could hose me, I need to reevaluate my strategy and even consider a card like Censor.
I think Censor is one of those cards that game one, and this is why I like this card, especially in the way I may choose to use it, spoilers, is game one. I imagine people are going to try to board out Censor against me because, you know, I can easily, my things are so powerful, and especially with Ajani, it lets me to play my, Oath of Ajani lets me play Planeswalkers one mana cheaper, so I can play around Censor all day long. You board that out. I board in that. Oh, man.
Yeah, you sound like you have, like, actually a very valid game plan for this already. But I'm talking about the people who think that it's just going to be the silver bullet that wins in the game when they play it on turn 3.
No, you're right.
Right? And aware that they're also aware.
Oh, and let's remember, Dromoka's Command is still in this format.
Absolutely.
And it's gross. Yep. So that's the card of all my enchantments, Authority of the Councils, if I choose to play this. This card, Dromoka's Command's gross. We saw it in Standard a few standards ago. That that's the danger of like relying on this. So, you know, you keep a crappy hand. Yeah, you got your Slimity and they've got Dromoka's Command and they're just like, go ahead. So this is going to be more of a dance, especially when we start to play like...
This format is the best.
Players. It is. This format is so much fun. I can't tell you how happy I am to be a serious casual. It's just, this is just, I'm passionate. I'm putting time and effort in and I don't feel like it's not worth my time and effort. You know, like the rewards are there. The discovery is there, which we're going to talk about later about data, because there's a whole argument going on with Saffron Olive and big data. But I think from a player standpoint, there's a bit of play to that. Now let's wrap it up on Frontier Championships. We got Marvel, we got Flyers, we've got, I don't think my deck is even in the top three. It's some, I'm playing a random side deck. I don't think anyone's going to play. But we're going to see that. We're going to see aggro decks for sure. We're going to see these fast, low to the ground aggro decks going to try to get in under us. So this is what I wanted to talk to you about. Anyone who's playing a control style deck or mid range, what is the best board wipe in Frontier right now? Because we've got three to choose from now. Radiant Flames, Kozak's Return, and Bantu's Reckoning. All three mana, all very powerful, all very different.
Would you like me to explain to you why Bantu's Reckoning is entirely unplayable?
I mean, I do want you to tell me how stupid I am.
No, so you're not stupid. You are thinking the way that a ton of people think, and it costs okay. three mana, and it's a board wipe. But that is factually incorrect. Think about it this okay. way. It costs you a minimum of 6 mana. Right? Because yeah, the three mana that you pay on it, you have to pay again next turn. But think about this, Maddie. Here's a scenario. It's turn 8. Okay? You have 7 lands in play. You cast Bantu's Final Reckoning. How much mana does it cost you?
3.
It costs you 6. Your entire turn. Because if you tap... Because every other mana you tap beyond that costs double. So, for example, if you have 6 mana in play... And you play 3 for Bantu's Reckoning, and you cast no other spell, those 3 lands don't untap, it costs you 6 mana. If I can force you to use those other 3 mana, that spell costs you 12 mana.
I didn't think about that. That's true. It's probably one of those, it's almost a Punisher card, in a way that your opponent can make it really bad.
And that goes for every Reckoning, because I strongly considered Oketra's final word, Oketra's last word. Yeah. And then all I thought is, this still costs me 6 mana, and in a let's say there's a counter war over it, if I have to cast this and cast a counter spell, like let's say I cast this and cast Void Shatter, if this resolves, this spell costs me 12 mana.
See, this is why I keep you around, man.
I know.
You're just so good at like making me like double question my thoughts.
And I look good in the color purple, so it's
yeah,
fine.
Obviously. Okay, here's the card that I'm like... It's actually convinced me to again, I was bad.
So real quick, the best sweeper in the format is Hour of Devastation. Let's move on.
No.
It absolutely is.
Come on.
Yes.
5 mana? Okay, see, this is where I... Oh, wow, okay. Okay, against an Atarka red deck, you're never getting there. Well, that card will be in your hand.
But
you
also
die.
Can't play Fumigate, which is actually the best spell against Atarka red, so don't worry about it. Like, that's not the plan versus Atarka red. Versus Atarka red, you want to try and one for one them as fast as possible so that Atarka's command is a blank.
And then Hour of Devastation is just a massive catch-up.
Like, absolutely.
But we could play 4 mana versions of that are just better.
What is it?
Languish.
But then you have to be in a black deck.
I mean, if you're playing Hour of Devastation, you're telling me you're not in black?
I'm talking blue-white-red control.
All right. Well,
right?
In a blue,
I'm talking
white, red,
a Saheeli combo deck.
So here's my thoughts. I think that there is the low-to-the-ground wrath, and there's the catch-up wrath. There's the Fumigate and there's Radiant Flames. Those are the ones I believe are the best. Radiant Flames is just so good.
Well, there's also Kozlek's Return and Kozlek's Return, which is a very interesting concept. If you can flash it back, it's insane. It saves you 4 slots.
But again, it's one of those cards that if you're playing that strategy, then yes, that is just obviously what you do. But if you're not, if you're playing like... I just feel Radiant Flames is the best. For me, like... It just shuts down all the fast decks.
It's scalable. Or buys you that turn. Yeah, no, it's, yeah. I totally agree with you that Radiant Flames is absolutely sort of like the best 3 mana sweeper versus anything else that's out there. But it's still very situational, and it's very.
You gotta know what to play.
It's very easy for a deck like. A deck like Mono White to completely outclass Radiant Flames. Now, also think about this, Maddie. With all the extra prowess creatures that cost 1 mana that are 1/2s. Think about this. If I cast Radiant Flames, Okay, let's say you have two Swift Spears and a Soulscar Mage, okay? 3 1-2s that yep. have prowess. If I cast Radiant Flames for 3 and you respond with the Tarkus command, you can +1/+1 your team, making them 2/3s, yeah. and then prowess making them 3/4s and still dome me for 3. So Radiant Flame still has a natural 2-mana counter to this in the Atarka red deck, and yes, they lose out on all that damage, but they save all their creatures, which is, generally speaking, the most important part. Exactly. And it's not really that good against Mono White, because as soon as they can play...
Yeah, Mono White is tough.
As soon as
Mono
they can play, like, an Always Watching, or heaven forbid they play 2 Always Watchings, or jam a Gideon Emblem.
Or Thalia.
Exactly. Yeah. They can sort of, like, outclass that spell pretty quickly, and Thraben Inspector is another 1-mana 2/1 that's going to become something that's, like, actually a problem. And let's say you Radiant Flames it away. They still have the clue to sort of buy it back. So... It's good against the, like, go wide mono red decks where you get to clean up all their tokens, which is still really powerful. But it's you gotta, like, practice with this card. It's not a catch-all like Wrath of God or Damnation is in other formats, where you get to turn 4, you play it, you take a deep breath, and you figure out what you're supposed to do after this. It's a very skill-intensive card.
I am not saying it isn't. I just, for, like, the strategy that you need, like, if you fear turn 4, you're dead. I just feel like... It's Radiant Flames. Like if you can hit for 3, because I think the difference between like 2 and 3 is huge. Just for what you said.
Yep.
A lot of the times they don't have the Atarka's command. They have something else, and it's not good enough. Which, you know, again, you got to learn how to play the format, and variance is a thing. So it is what it is, right? Let's talk about the card though that I did end up ordering another 4 of, which I don't know if I can play this card in this deck, but I still do not have my foil Tireless Trackers because for some reason they're impossible to find in Toronto.
But I will, because all the Toronto players play them.
I know they won't ever. No one wants to sell them. No one will sell that card. I'm gonna have to order it from the States because I give up. But the card I bought.
Hey, maybe you check at Grand Prix Toronto coming up this weekend.
I will. That's I'm totally on that. But Ronum Excavator. So this is like my Crucible in the world.
I think it's Ramunab.
Ranoab?
Ramunab.
Wait, are you seriously saying it's Ramunab?
Look it up.
So when you're sleeping, I'm ramming you? Okay. So
Ramunab. It's not like the Hour of Glory, okay?
Hey, man, Hour of Devastation from my point of view. Okay, so
Ramunab, we're off the rails. Excavator.
Yeah, we're up. Okay, so this card is insane. I think in, like, future builds. And it's weird to say that now because, like, in Frontier, I'm not sure this card besides, like, hey, that... Tireless Tracker, you know, my green machine 1-2 punch, boom, boom. Like, I like this. Like, it's great. I'm, like, instantly fixing my mana, fetch landing for all, you know, whatever. I think that's great. But we got a bunch of crazy lands that I could not believe when you start to look at them.
Yeah, they're so good.
One of them is the Ranunap Ruins.
Hey, you got it right.
This is, I know. Well, yeah, I do listen. This card's a shock if you sacrifice a desert for 4 mana. So... how awesome is, like, that Tireless Tracker out and, you know, your Excavator? It's like an infinite, like, eventually I'll kill you, you know. Yeah, it's not the best. It's a little slow, but I'm thinking there's a rug value deck, kind of like build it like Legacy, where we're playing, like, good counter spells, good powerful creatures that can just do stuff. And I like this.
Think about this, Maddie. If
a green deck.
If you were playing rug, you could drop the blue and play colorless because this is a card that casts Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher.
Yes, it does. Which we saw, and I'm not going to take credit for it. I saw the red deck with the Eldrazi in it playing this. That was really good. Again, that's another thing.
I mean,
scares
honestly,
me too.
The Hashrep Oasis, the green one, that's 1 green tap, sacrifice a desert, target creature gets +3/+3 until end of turn. Throw that on your Reality Smasher, and that's basically a lightning bolt, right? Your creature's currently almost unblockable. It's going to do the 3. So between those two in a red-green deck with the Excavator, Tireless Tracker, you have like a really strong, aggressive game plan that doesn't need to dip into that third color when your third color is colorless.
I mean, I love that. I think, too, that I bet we're only going to see other lands that get better. So, like, Frontier as a format is just really great. Like, when you see these little... interactions between a couple of cards and you're like, there's a deck here, but it's not ready. You know, it's like a baby deck.
Yep.
It's just incubating. But I love, like, just making sure I remember.
Well, this is why we're so into standard for non-standard players, right? Because that's where everything starts. Everything starts with standard. Exactly. That's how these cards are designed. And now we get to take them and mold them into whatever sort of Ludwig's test subject we're looking for, right? Like, that's what we get to do as people who love brewing and have a home in Frontier. So pay attention to the SCGs. Pay attention to... you know, the standard showdown results from Face-to-Face Toronto, pay attention to the Pro Tour. Because these are all where these things start, and like Maddie likes to say, get in on the ground floor and get your cards from face2facegames.com early before they become worth like a bajillion dollars and you can't find foil tireless trackers anymore.
Oh man, I screwed up there. I had a chance to get them two for $10 and I was like, ugh, whatever.
But how would I want to go through and create an archive of just like a series of segments of you saying I screwed up and which cards they were.
Dude, I've screwed up so many times because I see it. It's there.
And then I tell you.
Yeah. No, the worst is I tell you. I'm like, hey, you should do this. And you're like, shouldn't you do that?
Yeah,
I'm like,
and then I do it.
I'm going to wait. And then you do it. And you're like, did you do it too? And I'm like, no. It's like, what are you doing? Anyways, let's end on a card or a couple cards that we think like we should... This is another card that, like, scare me. Torment of Hailfire.
Yeah.
Feels like a card that someone's going to be bringing, and we are going to be telling stories about it.
This feels like my Cut to Ribbons ramp finisher, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, right? And there was a great black-red deck in Standard at the SCG event, which was really good. And
this card makes an insane flashback card in, like, a Grixis Control deck with Jace.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, wow.
You loot it away early, or you cast it for one or two, you know, you just like make them discard a card or two. But then when you're on turn 8 or 9 and you play that Jace, or maybe we have like Esper Control because we can play Ogitize Command. So like your turn, your end turn, I counter your Gearhulk or reanimate my Jace, I tap and flip my Jace, and then smash you in the face with Torment of Hailfire.
That's right there. You're all like, that feels gross,
right? And we have Urborg, so any black spell is a strong consideration in a two color other deck, whether it's red blue or blue white.
Yeah. The other card that I think I'm not sure how to play it, maybe because I'm not playing Eldrazi. But if I was playing any type of Eldrazi in Frontier, I'm going to be packing a couple Scavenging Grounds. This is a desert that for two it exiles all cards from all graveyards, comes into play on tap, gives you your colors. This card's great. Like, insane.
Yeah, so
I think this card's actually buyable. Like, I don't even know what it costs, like a dollar right now. It's like $5 for a foil. But, like, this is a card that I'm actually thinking of, like, I'm going to try to pick up a couple. Because, Frontier is still graveyard light.
Yeah, this card's really awesome because you can... So it's a standalone, right? You can exile itself to exile all cards from all graveyards. And if you're not on the dig through time plan, let's say maybe you're looking at, like, a Mardu control deck, which is something that we haven't really got a chance to talk about, but some of these lands really help, like, or even like a, like you said, rug control, red green X, where you get to play a few extra deserts. I could see like a red green aggro deck wanting like three of these in their sideboard.
Well, so this is a deck I didn't want to tell anybody about, but I'm hyped, so whatever. For the people that like stay for an hour and 21 minutes, this is why you stay. So there's a deck I've been thinking, like, of honestly building. I didn't want to say this, but screw it. I'm going to say it. I think I can build a completely colorless Eldrazi deck with four hostile deserts because that card is insane. That's the desert that becomes a land for two mana if I exile a card.
Oh, it becomes a 3/4 elemental. Yeah. So this is sort of like our giant Mutavault-esque thing. Now... Where it gets a little more dicey of going monocolorless is you lose the fetch land in your graveyard to get rid of type aspect of it.
True.
So you have to sort of like do a thing with a desert, which puts you down a land to do another thing. But, I mean, even if you're a monocolor Eldrazi deck, let's say you have a card like Hour of Promise, which is the green one, which is also the GP playmat, which is really awesome for all of you Locust God commander players. I heard Matthias Hunt talking about this on the SCG, and he said, you know, he's like, you know, he's always a big fan of Primeval Titan, and I play Scapeshift in Modern too. So the more that I look at this, I could actually see me playing this as a one of in modern Scapeshift. Because
five mana,
go find two lands when you have like a three or four land mana suite like you would in your deck, and then Ramunap Excavator to sort of like figure out how you want to manipulate those. These are uncounterable activations against card decks that don't play Disallow or Nimble. Maddie, you say
whatever. I don't even know.
We got there.
Yeah. Obstructionist. Yeah. I can get that.
So if you're not playing against Nimble Obstructionist or Disallow, then they can't really interact with how you're using these things.
Right? Again, one of those cards that, like, pay attention to, I think it's actually very underrated right now. For Frontier, the big thing, even in, like, as random as this sounds, a Jeskai Flyer deck, it's just extra pressure. And I think it's one of those things you probably only fired off one or two turns because you're like, I'm going for the kill. I'm going early. Let's go. Like, or you run out of gas and you're like, all right.
If you can curve out like a Thought Knotseer into Reality Smasher and to activate this land.
That's gross.
I'm pretty sure that's lethal, right? So on turn four, you go four. Turn five, you attack for 9, which is the first amount of damage. Let's say they're playing Frontier, so they've fetched. And then you have to do 10 more damage, right? So you can do like, you know, over 20 damage by turn 6 if you just curve out with this land.
I mean, I don't know. And then the other card is like, maybe there's also, I always forget the name of it. There was an artifact, you convoke it, it gives all your creatures +2/+2.
Obelisk of Urd.
That's right. That's another card that I think like, hey, name Eldrazi with it. Ooh, that's also interesting. And maybe even Throne of the God Pharaoh. Wow.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm not saying
I like the rails good. You're going off right now.
Yeah, I don't. I'm totally off the rails. I'm even thinking about, like, you do know that we could be playing, what is it, Mirage Mirror?
Oh, geez. Like, okay, no. Okay, next topic.
What? Are you telling me that if I go turn, if I get an, look, dude.
Yes, that's what I'm telling you.
Okay, I'm just saying Reality Smasher, copy that. What?
Next.
There's going to be a lot of power. Okay, there's going to be a lot of power. All I'm saying is Frontier is definitely a format of battleships. So either you are winning with little guys really fast, or you're playing this like, it's just smack you in the face.
Actually,
like
copying Smasher is pretty good.
Yeah. There's definitely the power. I guess I'm playing like a bizarre mid-range deck, which I'm scared of either side. So I don't know what I'm doing. I'm scared of like people just like going over the top and going under me.
Welcome to Maddie Studios' Cerebral Cortex.
Yeah.
It's a dark, dangerous place. If you've ever seen Stranger Things, season 2 is just going to be Maddie talking.
Literally. What is this thing? I don't know. The other card I'm not sure we're going to see, although I think that it's just so powerful and is claim to fame. And I don't know what deck is going to want that, but Soulfire Grandmaster, Dragon Master Outcast, like...
So those are actually kind of cool. Interesting. Yeah. I really like this card in a Grixis shell where you get a Jace, like you said. But
yeah, you can get Jace.
Well, you can get Jace, you can give him haste, you can flip it and like turn your Jace into a Planeswalker. But this whole card being your graveyard still has a total converted mana cost of 3. Therefore, you can cast it with Goblin Dark Dwellers. And if you just had a Dark Dwellers that was a 5-mana 6/4 haste menace... Like, that's not a nothing card.
No, that's actually a good
way.
That's
basically a build-your-own-dragon, you know? And even if, like, you're... Let's say you cast this. I don't know. Can you cast both sides of this? Yeah, probably not. I'm not a judge. Sharon? Judge Sharon?
Actually, can you? That's a good question.
No, we need to ask Judge Sharon. Yeah. If you want to go on Twitter and hashtag Judge Sharon this, you will get an answer from our own Judge Sharon.
It'll be spicy, but you'll get an answer.
Yeah, it'll be spicy, that's for sure.
It'll be spicy. Definitely your answer is going to come with some sauce.
Some sauce.
A little bit of sauce.
Yeah.
Step one. Yeah. Here's what you want to do.
I need 3 things. I need a claim, I need a fame, and I need Judge Sharon right now.
I need to know what's going on. Now, you know what's funny? A lot of talk going on, and you read other podcasts or like articles.
You read other podcasts. Yeah.
Pretty much. You know how it goes. People saying Hour of Devastation has nothing in it. It's super weak, blah, blah, blah. You just heard us rant off about 15 cards that are making Frontier awesome. You know, it's one of those things. The format you play determines the potential of the sets. So, hey, serious casual man.
Oh, man, there's a Pikachu in my house. Anyways.
Dude, you do not play Pokemon when we're casting. That is...
I have a problem.
You totally do. And that game's also a year old. Get over it.
Hey, there's a one-year anniversary. Anyways, I don't want to start talking about this, so...
Okay, nice. Do we even want to talk about data?
Yes, or big time.
Okay, so Saffron Olive, again, he heard the thing about, like, Wizards doesn't want to release too much data. They're cutting deck lists back again, and there's two sides of the argument. One side is, hey, data is data. We should be able to figure out the format as fast as possible so that then we don't waste our money on buying cards. Because if I want to buy a deck that is guaranteed to win, then I don't want to waste money on cards that won't win. The other side is, Magic is not about the card you buy or the deck you play to win. Magic is a journey of discovery. Because buying a Ruin Ran Unap. See, now I just have this bizarre image in my head when I say that. Yeah. That's great. That's awesome. You buy, you know, some excavators, and you try a brew and you fail, but you had that experience. And then you can buy more cards. So you get to experience more cards. It's a value play versus experience play, I assume. So I am on the fence on one part of it that, yeah, I understand that it's going to make the Pro Tour and competitive streamers and certain people, it's going to be harder for them because they don't have all that data. And it's not going to hurt the people you think, right? It's not going to hurt Channel Fireball with 20 people on it who can do their own testing anyways. It's going to hurt Daniel Fournier, who has a two-man team and is going to guess more. On the other hand is, what percentage of players are those people affected? Very small. And then you look at a serious casual and I just want the chance to figure it out myself. You know, the last thing I want is, here's a new set. It's already, we figured it out. These are the five best cards. They're all $50. Like, I don't know if I want that anymore. And maybe the journey, I'm on a different journey now and I'm looking for something different. But I feel like discovery is the one thing that I want to keep looking for. Is that weird?
No, you know, no, like... I get what you're saying, but think about it this way. And this is something that I've just been learning as I've been getting like 8 quintillion messages about Frontier and decklists and where to find data, is that the people I know that are really passionate about Frontier, that have been playing it for a year or been playing it for a week, it doesn't matter. Everyone feels like they're much more justified, and their hard work in brewing will be much more rewarding by the format not being figured out, by there not being infinite information out there. So I do want to shout out to, I believe the website is, I should probably look it up first, MTG Hunter. MPG. Is this a thing? Yes, MPG. I just looked at MPGHunter.com has a filter that you can search by Frontier cards. So one of the first websites to do that, shout out to them. I know Goldfish has a whole section of deck lists, but those tend to get like buried really quick. And if you guys are listening, maybe you could have a feature where you sort by who's submitted by.
I don't know if
that's possible. Maybe I'm missing it, but MTG Hunter, MTGHunter.com, you can sort by Frontier if you just want to look at cards in the Frontier format. So huge shout out to those guys. So that's one way to get some amount of data. But when people keep asking me for deck lists and ways to, like, just basically net deck, and there isn't. And instead of getting the reaction of like, oh, well, then I'm not playing the format, they're like, well, I guess I'm brewing up something great then.
Yeah, the argument that, I mean, it's not even an argument. The one side of it that I sympathize with, because it does hurt, is I don't know how to sideboard. It makes sideboarding infinitely impossible, and it also makes random variance a higher factor. So just like in Vegas, we sit down against someone who like decided to throw Siege Rhino's main deck in a Collected Company deck.
Yeah,
okay. I was not, but I'm totally not expecting that. So my play pattern on the first three turns is like, okay, I know what's going on here, and then bam, it's totally not. So yeah, I understand that this is more randomness to the game now, because you can't just know what your opponent is going to do. But maybe, is that a bad thing? I don't know. I'm not sure.
I absolutely do not think it's a bad thing at all. I think it's challenging. I think what it does is it forces you to think about deck archetypes critically, as opposed to specific decks, and saying, everyone asks me about this, like, what do you think the Frontier metagame is going to be like? And my actual answer is, when we have 100 players, I don't think any deck is going to be more than 7% of the metagame. So that leaves us to like over 20 plus different decks. Now, that's not to say that there isn't only 5 or 6 sub-archetypes of hyper-aggressive decks, aggressive mid-range decks, combo decks, combo control decks, control sure. decks, and straight combo decks. Like, those are all things that are like real strategies. So then my sideboard is a little more generalized, and I don't have the ability to just hate out one entire subsection yeah, of the metagame. Exactly. And that to me makes it, yeah, a little more uncertain, and I'm obviously confident that I'm going to win the first place trophy, but it's more exciting to me that that's not 100% certain.
Oh, man. Okay, I'm with you. Now, one thing to keep in mind, the biggest problem with Modern everyone has is Blood Moon. These cards that you bring in shut decks down. So maybe the fact that like there's formats or they're trying to get to a point where they're saying, hey, we don't want you to just go game 2 sideboard, hey, card, win. So maybe that's good. I personally believe like less data. Okay, the argument to frame in your mind is this. 20 years ago, there was Duelist and there was Scry Magazine. And a deck would come out and it would take 3 months before everyone knew what it was. That doesn't exist anymore. Magic is not played like that anymore. And that's old man on a porch thinking. That'll never happen again. But the things that made that great, part of it we can still have. We can't have everything, but we can have a little bit of it. And I think Wizards was trying to just say, hey guys, we really, really, really don't want, hey, here's Hour of Devastation, here's the Pro Tour, format solved, now stop buying the cards. So I am all for more limiting of data. I know that's crazy, I know a lot of you don't like that, but I think it's actually a good thing. If it does result in maybe one or two pro teams figuring everything out and taking advantage of that information, let's see, you know, like let's throw it out there. If it happens, maybe we address that when it happens, but it hasn't yet. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like big data is, it's a double-edged sword, man, and I think it does more damage than it does good for the vast majority of players. That's my take.
And that's all Matty has to say about that. I'm interested in people. Okay, so I'm going to touch on Pokemon Go here real quick. There's a website that called The Sylph Road, and these are a few people. I don't need to gender label them because I don't know. Doesn't matter. Right? I know. I thought,
name, man.
Right? It's true. This is a small group of people who take a massive amount of data and say, these are our hypothesis of how things work. This is not fact. This is not how it's going to work. But what they do is they're a part of the community because of all the work and hard and effort they put into getting as much information out there as possible. Something like limiting data might make a website like MTG Goldfish more popular in the community from all their legitimate hard work and all the decks that get submitted and all the data that they are collecting. Exactly. So this actually might be a good thing for the Goldfish guys in general. And maybe we see some other like hardcore data mining nerds like, I really wish I could remember this guy's name and he listens to the podcast and he's going to be upset that I don't. But he has asked for every single deck list from the North American Frontier Championship so he can data mine it and produce an article for us
with
every single deck from the tournament. And shout out to him. I'm really, really genuinely sorry that I don't remember your name, but I'll probably see you on Wednesday at the store. So that's something that's super exciting. And if that didn't matter, then that's just one less thing to be excited about. So I'm actually kind of for this. There's so much data that comes out of Magic Online every single day and every single like hour with leagues where it just literally lets people or even forces them to turn off their brains. And and I 100% don't listen to Desolator Magic. Stop listening to him. He's toxic for the community. He's a toxic human being. But I did happen to listen to his Why Net Deckers Are Killing Magic, and don't listen to it. Do not go on and click on that. But that concept isn't entirely wrong. Just hear it from somebody else who isn't a human scumbag.
Yeah, I mean, net decking is an entirely different scenario than data. Net decking is, look, I'll be honest, I'll tell you this. Look, I'm about to play in what I consider like a pretty serious tournament, the Frontier Championship. I guess it's true. Have I gone on the MTG Goldfish and started looking through user submitted brews? Yes. If I found a list that I was like, this is perfect, I guess I net decked, right? Like, I guess I did, but it's more like I'm looking for something that is my playstyle. I'm looking for things that fit the way I want to play. So, I net decking is such a, again, it's, I get it, but I also hate, what I like about it is like, hey, everyone can put your lists up so you can find anyone's list. What I don't like about it is the aggregation of it is like, hey, these are the five lists that do the best. So when you correlate deck lists with win percentages, I think that's when you get the problem, because then people don't look at all the hundreds of awesome lists. They only look at five.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm not sure how that works. I think you have to promote decks. Like, why is Saffron Olive the best streamer? Why is he the best content producer right now, besides High Club? But why is he, like, doing so well? Why can he single-handedly spike Duroth's Messenger? It's because he's making interesting stuff.
Yep.
Right? If all he did was be like, here's Blue-White Monument, like, here's, you know, if all he did was cover the top five decks, I think he would be much less popular.
Yep, totally agree.
I think net decking is, like, in the right way, when it's used in the right way, I think it's really good.
On that note, I definitely want to shout out Rogue Deck Builder. Got to meet him in Vegas. That guy was super cool.
Oh, he's awesome.
Huge shout out.
Kevin is great, yeah, man. He is like the Maddie. He's passionate. He's the old heavy metal Maddie rants. Like, he rants.
Yeah.
And they're good rants.
Yeah, he's
like,
great.
Go check out his latest rant. We love it. He's one of those people, like, he's for data. He thinks there's nothing wrong with it. And I respect his opinion. And I think, like, I understand 100% where he's coming from and why he thinks that way. Same thing with Saffron. Like, I get it. I really do. I also, again, the journey's been a longer one for me. So I've seen more of it now. And I'm just at a different place, and I'm looking at it from a different perspective, and I think there's a bit of negative to it. You just gotta weigh it for yourself. But on that note, folks, we're gonna be playing. I have some stickers left, so if Friday, if you're playing me or you see me, I'll be wearing a Hype Club shirt, probably purple. So see us, let us know. We'll get you a sticker if we got them, and if you beat us. Well, you're not going to beat us.
Yeah, when you battle and play a hard-fought three games to an unfortunate L, and I'm handing in the match slip that has your name on it that I've signed for you, you can take a picture of it and post it on social media to let everyone know that you have been touched by greatness.
Yeah, well, hashtag crushed us. That's what I just. If you beat us, also, we'll give you everything.
Also, but if we a sticker to anyone who calls Judge Sharon out when they need a judge call.
Oh yeah! Don't even make me make custom Sharon shirts for the thing, because I'm this close to doing that.
All I need is three things, Maddie. Three things.
We'll see you next week, where we talk about how badly we all got
hype out. Sharon, Sharon.
I'm this close to making. Insane. So I was fooling around at the grocery store. That sounds wrong. But I was just being a goofball. Wow, that was really bad. I was just goofing around at the grocery store, okay?
Okay.
And I was there by myself. Yeah, don't say, okay, where's this going with your hand over the pause button? No. So I was at the grocery store and I was just goofing around, right? And I was there by myself and I was like, oh, that's, you know, I'm like juggling fruit and stuff. I was just being silly, as I normally do. Anyways, there's a guy who saw me, like, you know, juggle three apples that I put in my cart. He's like, oh, that's cool. And he tried to, like he's like, oh, I can juggle a banana. Now that I'm telling this story, this sounds so dumb. Anyways, so he did and he missed. So I yelled out, I'm like, Sharon, as he did it. And he looked at me and he's like, he gives me a cockeyed thing and he's like, what? He's like, are you an Ozzy Osbourne fan?
Oh, man.
And I'm like, no. I was at GP Vegas. And there was like this super awkward moment where like he's like, oh, you're not who I thought you were. And we literally just stopped talking, turned around, and walked the other way.
So my big Blissey Pokemon is named Sharon. So whenever I put it in a gym, it says Sharon with like 30 exclamation points. And I met a guy named Ryan out on the street, also playing Pokemon. He's a regular at the store. And it was early one morning and we were taking over gyms together. And he just looked over and I don't think he listens to the podcast because through our conversations, he would have been like, some of my like subtle jokes, but he just started reading my Pokemon and yelling Sharon in the middle of the street at like 7:30 in the morning. And I died. No. I was like, holy shit, this is the funniest thing I've ever heard. And you have no idea what's going on, but because I'm laughing so hard, he's laughing so hard. And it just took me right back to Vegas. So it was, woo, it spread like wildfire. It spread like Sharon.
Oh, man. Oh, dude. Just like, I totally got like one nice thing about that. Then I got the mental image just whooping, like a wet noodle in my face.
Yeah.
Just, like a banana dropped from the height of 50 feet. Oh, God. That's what her tanning was. No, anyway, you know what? We're done. Then we're not even here.
Yeah.
We're not
supposed to be. I just slipped in some soap.
Ain't the last I'ma see you due time. That's my word, I'ma see you. Front and ass rappers down here still an issue. Posing like they hard when we know they all secret. I'ma tell you, Dilla, why they lacking skills, pal. No stage presence, cadence, style. They living off of looks, skinny jean crooks, pre-K lyrics. What you wanna read a book? I reminisce when Mob dropped shook. Shan was down by law. Such a good look. Nas got son and his return was still matic. Rooster sauce in the static. You in slum fantastic. Thought I chopped you out, son. See how you doing. Come back to earth, homie. Hip hop is in ruins. I'm a third of the drop, but I'ma speak for the click. What up, though? We miss you, kid. Mother City say.
JD, flip another beat for me. JD, flip another beat for me. JD.
Yo, beat-wise, you still at cat, which most should be measured. I'm dead MC, known as she has displeasure. With the route the game is taking, how mundane things have gotten. You know, music on a whole, never mind, just hip-hopping. I'm in the club 3 hours in chains. DJ spinning top 40, we be hearing all day. Some MC be catalog, and yeah, they stay paid. But why pay over $1 when they lip-syncing on stage? King of Pop, Barry White, rolling over in their grave. Jones Girls, emotion saying, girl, back in our day. Still a dude, still writing, they wish to be like you. Producer extraordinaire, knowing them beats be recycled. But on your worst day, they couldn't mess with you. Cats making tea in remembrance of you. Least they could do is give your fam a dime or two. This man gave his heart, this is what the hunk y'all do. But yo, don't stress my yo. Word bomb, we got you. Tell by 10 I said what up, wordy right next to you. From NYC to the D, with heavy hearts we miss you. Word God, wish you were here. So until we meet again, just
flip another beat for me, JD. JD, flip another beat for me, JD. JD, flip another beat for me, JD. JD, flip another beat for me, JD. Yo.
Salute. ATCQ forever.